sorry I've left my cards at home.
Well, you're late as well. That's three times on the run. If you're late again, the supervisor said we're going to put you on daily sign and...
Ha!
To Run. Bruce Springsteen wrote it and ran with it back in 1975. That was Frankie Goes to Hollywood doing it again in 1984. Before that, Howling at the Moon by the Ramones. Cosmic likes to howl along on that one. Well, letters, we get letters. Bill Nelson and Empire of the Senses on CBC Stereo.
Oh,
Burning Down the House, of course. Talking Heads, that obviously from the soundtrack of their movie, Stop Making Sense. John Cale furthered the punk cause in America by recording The Stooges, The Modern Lovers, and the debut album for the Patti Smith Band. As a musician, well, he helped found the Velvet Underground with Lou Reed. And, of course, the Velvet Underground was part of that mixed circus of artists and bizarre types who toured as the exploding plastic inevitable back in the 60s. The Velvet Underground remains a source of inspiration and a point of reference for musicians today. Well, far from being a relic of the underground past, John Cale is still very much a wild card in the rock deck. In his own career, very much a going concern. Just before we hear from John Cale, let's hear a sample of his work with the Velvet Underground. Here's There She Goes Again on Nightlines. Velvet Underground tune that we just heard, and totting up his own album since then, I Make It 15. Hello, John.
Hello, Ron. How are you?
Not too bad. Am I right? Is it 15? That's with the new John Cale Comes Alive album. Well, there are a lot of different styles of music on those albums. I'm just wondering, how important is a musical change to John Cale?
Well, I think it started... I pretty much decided to set that pattern up in the difference between each album ever since Vintage Violence. It was Vintage Violence, then there was the instrumental album with Terry Riley. And from there on out, each album was... I mean, it was intentional on my part that each album be different. So with John Cale Comes Alive album, it was intended to be a retrospective, so it would contain as many varieties as possible, including some as yet unrecorded tracks.
Thinking of your current band and your show on stage, how does John Cale change his stage show from night to night?
Well, sometimes very radically. Sometimes we'd go up on stage and we'd play a few verses from the song and then stop and say, okay, well, you all know that one, and we'll go on to the next one. And eventually we'd run out of material, so we'd have to make some material up. And the band is, although the band is expert at being able to play all the material well, sometimes... as with everything, you get bored with doing the same thing every night, and we ended up improvising new material on stage.
All right, and I guess some nights that works and some nights it doesn't, then you take a chance.
No, I never take anything but calculated risks, and it's my responsibility to make sure that everything works.
All right, you sound as if you're determined to never give up taking risks.
That's right.
All right, on Nightlines here on the new live album is very good, but after all, that's not surprising considering your credentials in the music business. Do you want to lay them out for us? Tell us a little bit about your work on the other side of the microphone.
What, with recording? I mean,
yes.
Producing?
Yes.
Well, we did Jack Holzman, when he was running Elektra Records, gave me the opportunity to show what I could do with production. After doing Marble Index with Nico, which was an arrangement gig, basically, he let me do the first Stooges album. And then from there on, I did the next Nico album, and eventually the Squeeze and Patti Smith.
What was John Cale's approach to working in the studio? What kind of sound?
Well, in the case of Patti, Patti was a poet who really was a big Rolling Stone fan who wanted to be a Rolling Stone. So what we had to do was preserve the poetic side of it and that intelligent verbal side and encourage the musicians who had never made a record before to have as much fun as possible in the studio and not get hung up in all the technical aspects of it.
All right, and what was the results of your work with the Stooges you mentioned as well? How was that? What was their approach in the studio?
Well, the Stooges were very easy. I mean, we did that, I think, in about 9 days. It was very... I mean, they just went in the studio. They weren't fazed by anything. They just knocked out the record.
All right. Well, back in the mid-1960s, the sound of the Velvet Underground didn't have the technical expertise that you have today. Perhaps they didn't even want it, even if you'd had it offered to them back then. That'd be a fair summation?
Yeah, I mean... We'd have probably been reluctant to I think what we were interested in was very loud music. I mean, as you can imagine today, things are performances are very much louder than they were at the time of the Velvet Underground.
Well, listen, we're talking about small clubs as well. We're talking about an assault on the senses?
Yes, I mean, an assault on not only on your ears, but on your mind as well.
Well, you were talking about other events happening while you were playing then as well in the club, or...?
Yeah, the Exploding Plastic Inevitable was an extravaganza put together by Andy Warhol. And they would project black and white movies on top of color movies, and black and white slides on top of color slides. There would be spotlights shining on screen. It was just a magical form of chaos.
Well, the delete bins are full of last year's records. What's the explanation for the planned re-release of the 1960s Velvet Underground albums? What's there that's of interest yet today or still important?
Well, what I heard, there's some unreleased material. I don't know what was on the original 8-track or 12-track, as it was then, but there's some humorous sides to it. I mean, there's some humorous interchanges between Lou and myself.
All right, again, those days in the 60s with the... Velvet Underground. Did you cross the country with the full crowd?
Well, I think we drove as far as Detroit, and then went back to New York, and then flew out to L.A., and it was... Well, the West Coast, they were into something entirely antipathetic to what we were interested in. I mean, they were interested in flower power and peace and love, man. And we were into something a little more radical. We were talking about giving everybody the drugs they wanted to.
Now, thinking back to early tunes from Velvet Underground, how much was biography and how much was wish fulfillment?
I think those are portrayals of people. I mean, they're characterizations. I mean, heroin is a portrait of someone who's very unhappy with himself. And most of the time, first-person songs were really Lou's forte.
All right, well, let's hear some of that music. Here's John Cale and the Velvet Underground on Nightlines.
Yeah.
Velvet Underground, thinking of your description of the kinds of performance and the things that went on around the playing of the music as well, I'm wondering about John Cale making music today, and are there other kinds of music making that you're interested in? Videos, movie soundtracks, something completely out of the ordinary?
Yeah, there's a Dylan Thomas song cycle that I've started to refine. It's for a rock and roll band and a chamber orchestra and a cathedral choir and organ.
Would there be Dylan Thomas poems in it, or?
Yeah, there'll be. I mean, it's "Do Not Go Gently Into That Good Night" that comes off as a samba, and it's called the Falkland Suite. There's one poem in there called "Lie Sleep Sleep Be Calmed." There are four altogether, four Dylan Thomas poems from the collected poems.
Have you been back to Wales recently? I know you're from Wales.
Yes, about a month ago.
Did this strike? How did you come to choose the to work on the Dylan Thomas piece?
Well, I started working on them about a year and a half ago, but it's really, I think in Holland there's a possibility of doing it with the forces that I just mentioned, with the chamber orchestra. So it's time to sit down and write the score and refine it.
Do you think your audience have high expectations of you because of who you are, thinking of your past?
That's very difficult to answer. I mean, I don't think I've ever done anything that I'm ashamed of, so I don't really believe I let anybody down.
Do you feel the pressure with, you know, the next project? What will John Cale do next?
No, I don't. When you're on the road, you concentrate on something different than when you're back in your workplace. I mean, it's a different focus. When you're on the road, you get different information from the people that you meet. When you play in front of an audience, they give you different input. We've gotten really facile at making up songs on stage, and what we're going to do when we go back to New York is sit down and clean them up and make sure they make sense.
John Cale, thanks for talking.
You're very welcome. Thank you.